Thank you for joining us today on Property Talk from Louise's Lounge. My name's Louise Heatley, and I'm the Managing Director of Exclusive Links Real Estate. I've had 16 years in the real estate industry, so I know a few things and I know a few people. And through our podcast series, it's an opportunity for us to discuss some interesting real estate topics, have some guest attendees, and also an opportunity for you to meet some of the team. So today we have joined us Michael Cullen, who is our branch manager at our Dubai Marina shop, located in Marina Gate 1. And we have Zan Yohinki, the Chief Operating Officer of Property Monitor. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining me this morning.
Good morning, thanks for having me.
Morning. So Zan, very interesting career path from real estate in Manhattan to now spearheading the growth at Property Monitor. So give us some background. How do you get here today?
How did I get here today? Well, it started in a sunny day in 1982. No.
I wasn't born then.
How was it?
I was joking, but he actually wasn't.
So I started out in real estate in Manhattan as a broker for a small boutique company, did quite well there, and then went into launch, just after the launch of Keller Williams in New York City, as the chief operating officer there. Was there for about 3 years, got tapped to come out on that back of that success to launch the franchise here globally for Keller Williams, and did that for about 3 years. And then sort of got the foothold in the region. And then the last couple of years I've been over at Property Monitor. I've always been somewhat of a passion for the data side of the business. Consulted on a couple of platforms back in the US, and it was somewhat of a natural progression to go into Property Monitor here.
Okay, so you'd never been to Dubai before when you decided to move
from there? No, I came out for the Dog and Pony Show where they got me to sign up and come out and commit for my life, 2013. And it had just rained, so I got teased by the lovely weather.
Well, we've been here a long time, so we're obviously advocates for Dubai.
Yeah, came out then and relocated 2014 and haven't looked back since. Love it here.
Great. And you said you'd move from real estate to Property Monitor. So what is Property Monitor? What is the platform?
Yep. So we're the UAE's largest real estate data analytics platform. We take data from all different sources, not just transactional data, but anything to do with the real estate space. And then provide it back in useful analytics to various stakeholders. So obviously brokers, management companies, developers, surveyors, lenders, and even to the governments as well.
Okay, and what is your relationship with Cavendish Maxwell?
Cavendish Maxwell, so Property Monitor was born out of Cavendish Maxwell. Technically, we're a separate company, but we're currently a subsidiary. So Cavendish Maxwell is the UAE's largest surveying company. They do the most residential surveying and valuations in the industry. It was born out of a need for transparency of data. About 5 years ago, there was an incumbent in the market, wasn't really fit for purpose for everyone, so Property Monitor was born. Funnily enough, back when that original genesis of Property Monitor happened, when I was running Keller Williams, we were one of the first clients on there. We're the ones they were vetting through about, hey, what do you want to see? What sort of data do you want? So I've been involved from those early days with it. There's always been a passion there. So Cavendish Maxwell's there. We were providing services to them somewhat exclusively in the beginning. Okay. And then it started to roll out and be a commercial business, which then went out to the brokers, went out to lenders and developers, and traditionally not other surveyors. But since I've come in, that's all changing. Okay. We've sort of recored the business, changing the strategic direction of the company, and are now going on an unrestricted release to surveyors and pretty much everyone in the industry, and a formal separation and leaving mum and going out and getting our own house and own offices and completely separation. So big things ahead. And then regional expansion is on the horizon now. So within the GCC and some other key markets.
Wow, lots to be doing. So we talk about the importance of market transparency, and you did mention it there, and sharing information. So what is Property Monitor's importance in that that market to give us that accurate information?
So if you look at Dubai, the amount of data that's available is pretty low. There is publicly available data. Land Department does a good job putting out some level of data, but it's 5 or 6 fields of data, for the most part, that a broker's not going to have the time to really make useful. We take those 5 or 6 data points, use a whole bunch of other data sets we have, to take that from 5 or 6, in some cases 20 to 30 data points there. So it's much, much
very
more granular.
Detailed.
Yeah, on a daily basis, we're matching about 80% of the transactions that come through DOD down to a specific unit. So that's on villas, townhouses, apartments, and land. We don't provide that all out. Some of it's kept behind the scenes, but we're matching it there and then building unit histories behind everything. So the data we have is much, much more granular than anything that's out there. And it's not just transactional data. We were the first to start using surveyor data, so providing that real-time pulse of where things are with the market. Even before that, we started collecting broker data and developer data. So SPAs, MOUs, your pending sales.
So it's from lots of different...
So figure we've gone from the end of the transaction, a transaction record, and just gone back through the steps. So what happens before that transaction transfers? Well, if there's a mortgage, there's going to be a valuation done. So we've got a lot of that data that's in there. Before that happens, what's going to happen? There's going to be an SPA or an MOU done. So we've got a lot of that data in there. And then before that happens is an active listing in most instances. So we've got all those data points.
The journey, the whole A to Z journey.
Exactly. And then you can start to see through, because the transaction, when it'll actually occur, that price might have been decided a month, 3 months, 6 months ago. We've got this lag from the meeting of the minds and a contract getting signed to a registration of it. So there's that lag in the data there. That's also one of the other things we really spent some time addressing. We rebuilt our indices because we found that most indices weren't reactive enough to the market. You've got some consultancies that come out there, they'll launch and they'll say the index value is X for the month, and here's the month-to-month, year-on-year, quarter-on-quarter movement. It's normally 3 months out of date. Or three months
it's quite
behind.
We
called the bottom of the market last year in November, pretty much right smack bang on when it happened. 3 months later, all the other indices started to see positive price movement. Because we utilize so many different data points in there, we're able to have a more real-time assessment of what's going on.
So
in the
you captured that when it was actually happening, as opposed to having that delay effect.
Yeah.
Okay. And with regards to changes in the market, the aggressive sellers at the moment, and the slowdown in buyers chasing these listings, what other challenges are there out there in the market that you're seeing?
Hit the nail on the head. The slowdown in buyers chasing these listings. If you're someone that's lived in Dubai and you're thinking about purchasing, you've kind of had an idea where prices are. And yes, we're at near all-time lows, Q3, Q4 last year. Right? Market bottomed out. It was natural for there to be a bit of a spike, right? In some areas, especially the villa communities, well-established villa communities, you'd see prices jump from the last sale, maybe up 20%, 25%. And there was natural room for that. That should then start to slow. Maybe we should really be starting to see slow price appreciation after that initial bounce. Maybe it's going to go from, say, that 20% now to 5%, and then a percent, and then half a percent a month. And it should be this slow, gradual uptick. We have this little bounce, but now it should be this slow, long, drawn out over the next 4 to 7 years, a typical market cycle. We're not exactly seeing that, especially when it comes to active listings. Right? You're seeing... We were talking an example before. Villa that I live in sold for 3.7 at the bottom of the market. Perfect price, should have bought it, didn't. 3 months. You know, when you call the bottom of the market, you don't take advantage of it.
And you live here.
Hindsight.
Then.
We're the worst, right?
And
we're always going to
get to it. Agent.
Just industry insiders is the worst.
Sorry, just rubbing that in a little bit more.
We actually use it as an example when we're pitching some of our products, and it's like it stings every time. And then I'm in a huge plot, lovely villa, not upgraded or anything. And then about 3 months later, one sold for 4.2. So there's that jump. Legitimate jump.
Immediate.
The one at 4.2, not overpriced. There's some other ones thrown in there around it, but that went up, and it was the perfect comparison. Same plot size, same condition, three villas down the street. Now you've got people going on the back of that 5.5.
Yep.
For one in a smaller pot, not as good. It's nowhere near. And you're seeing it just sit. Right? Buyers are going and looking at it. They're submitting offers, but sellers are thinking they can get this price. That I think a lot of them get stuck with, well, I paid this for it. Or if I sold 3 years ago, I could have got this for it.
They use their purchase price,
which is means zero. What you paid for it, what someone else tells you is
it's
it worth,
it's not going to change
zero.
The market.
The market definition is what a seller is willing to accept and a buyer is willing to pay. If it's a cash transaction. If it's not a cash transaction, we've got a couple other things to throw in there. It's what a bank's willing to lend on based on a surveyor's valuation. And what's happening now is surveyors are really having a hard time to justify further price increases. And they're correct.
Yeah. They come in a lot under the valuations.
Yeah, and I see a lot of them. They come through, and I speak with a lot of other people in the industry and with mortgage brokers as well. And it's frustrating. You don't want a valuation to come in under. No. But at the end of the day, a lot of the surveyors, they just can't justify these big jumps. If there's renovations, that gives them a little more flexibility. Mm. But something that's stock standard from the developer that's gone up in the last, well, say 6 months, 50%, they can't. Mm. The risk that's there on an 80% LTV loan or a 75% LTV, it's huge for the bank. Mm. If they add that extra there, the bank's completely exposed. So I think we're naturally, even with the surveyors aside, we're seeing people that are familiar with the market here pull back. They're smart enough, they've gone, we don't feel that it's comfortable enough, we're comfortable enough that the market's appreciated that much. Yeah.
Don't think it's realistic across the board. They're sitting back and
sellers are being
slow down. Yeah.
And I think from the brokerage side, you're seeing that, we're getting that same evidence from others. Mm. And then I think you're probably going to start to see certain segments of the market start to naturally arrest that price increase. Mm. I think we've got interest rate rises on the horizon very soon. It's not going to be the 2023 things that were spoken about earlier.
Yeah.
The fact we're pegged to the dollar, inflation is starting to go up in the US. We're going to start to see probably interest rates rise there in the next two quarters. Because we're pegged, we're going to see them throw on here. It's going to be small increases, but that is going to rule out some of that purchaser pool right now that's probably already stretching themselves by taking a larger mortgage than they normally would. That extra 0.5% that might come into a mortgage increases their payment a couple of hundred dirhams, but for them it might just be over the line. So I think we'll start to see that also start to slow the market.
Do you see that as a positive thing, the slowdown in the market? Yeah.
If we kept the current pace right now, we're going to look at annual appreciation of probably 25 to 30%.
Too much now, isn't it?
Does that scare anyone in this room?
well, we like the idea, but it's not sustainable, is it? It's not good.
That's the thing. I mean, I want to see sustainable growth.
We do.
What I want to see is the next 4 to 7 years, a nice full market cycle where suppliers is thought about. And I think we're starting to see that with developers, where prices continue to go up at a manageable pace and where everyone feels there's value in the market.
Yeah.
That's where I hope we go.
Yeah.
Last month, there were 6,800 plus transactions that happened. That's a record.
Yeah.
It's the highest since December 2013.
Yeah.
It's crazy numbers. Yeah.
June or May?
That was June.
I was going to say.
That was June. Yeah. There's some dynamics we can talk about as well about the type of transactions that are happening. There's been big shifts in the last 12 months in where the purchases are happening, what type of
property. High-end properties.
So high-end is a big one, but also the one of my things I always harp on about is we talk about, I hate the word secondary. I think it's a misnomer to use it.
Resales.
We've got, exactly. Mm. And we've got different types of resales. There's two types of registration. There's off-plan, which is the accrued. Mm-hmm. And then the property is completed, it's got the BCC, and there's a title deed. Mm-hmm. So we've got those two. Mm-hmm. A lot of the time people are referring to off-plan as developer sales. Largely they are, but you could buy from someone right now and you can sell it to me next week. That's a resale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's getting double counted a lot of time.
And you're still accrued because it's off-plan.
Exactly.
But yes, it's true. Mm.
So, and people say that when it's not built, it's the primary market, so it's not secondary. So I don't like the term. So I like to separate it into registration status. So we've got accrued title deed, the piece of paper you get.
The initial registration.
Mm. Yep, and then we separate it to initial sales and subsequent resales, whether it's a second, third, or nth sale.
You could say that about the developers as well, because when you said primary developer, you'd think off plan. Yet we've actually saw a huge increase in ready developer.
So this is this is one of the big switch, right? Mm. And it's fundamental for the market here. When 5 years ago and before, when a project was announced, right, and launched, how quickly did it sell out? Weekend?
Yeah.
Done?
Yeah.
Someone's walking down the queue and then selling it onto the next person. There's your first resale.
I've just bought one. Do you want it?
Count how many are available and walk down the queue. Construction cycle is 2 to 3 years on most projects. Mm-hmm. What you're seeing now is a developer go through the entire construction cycle and having unsold inventory at the end of the day. Some by design, I mean the Sharma's an exception, right? By design. You got other established developers that just haven't been necessarily inventory out.
Yeah.
Again, some by design, they've just gone, prices are too low, we're gonna reel back some of the inventory and just keep it on the books and see how the market goes. Others have just struggled. Mm. Maybe it's the wrong product mix, wrong location, market saturated. So you've seen this big switch in there are more title deed transactions happening now than off plan.
Yeah.
Historically, the ratio is probably 60-40 in favor of off-plan, so in Akud. Now that's flipped to completed. And a big chunk of that is developer initial sales going into that.
Yeah, I think you've witnessed that as well. I mean, Michael's more on apartments than villas. But what have you witnessed?
Exactly what you're saying, Zan. And I think that I really like your reports because you do separate the stock. So yeah.
How do you use the CMA reports? Obviously, we use Property Monitor for buyers, sellers. What are the advantages?
It's for client CMAs for sellers to help justify a sale price. So most of our staff know the price of a one bed in Bay Central. That's fine, you can give them the unit and they'll go 1 million. But the CMA helps justify that price and it proves to the seller where we're getting that price from, and it's not just Property Finder listings.
Yeah. Mm.
Is there a big difference between the listing, because your data has both, you see the listing, the marketing prices, and then actual transfer prices. Mm. What's the variance?
Oh, there's a difference.
Yeah, we know there is. How big is that?
It varies, and we've done a pretty in-depth analysis because you use that within one of our other products. It can vary greatly by community, by property type, and also by the brokerage. You'll see there are certain brokerages, no names.
Not
exclusive links.
Thank you, just checking.
Your top tier companies are pretty good. Right? They have it there, and there is this margin that's in there. I mean, sometimes you agree, you'll advise on a price, and the seller says, well, can we try an extra couple of percent? Maybe your tolerance is 5%, and you're accounting for that in a market that's trending up, not 15 or 20%. Mm. And there are some that we see that consistently overprice. Sometimes they do it just to win the listing. Mm. Right? I can get you whatever you want for it. Not good.
That's the biggest issue we face.
Yeah, and look, it's when I was a broker back in the many years ago in Manhattan, we'd face the same, but to a lesser extent. Because a lot of things were done exclusively there. You'd lose the exclusivity if you weren't generating traffic and interest in it. You agreed to this price and now you're going to stand by it. So a lot more of the time, we'd turn down a lot of listings if the seller was unrealistic or insistent on the price.
Doesn't help the market, does it, if us agencies are pricing things out of the market?
No, and you still see the same property on the portals at different prices.
Right? Yeah.
And sometimes the seller has agreed to these different prices, not to blame the brokers. Mm. It's just that does not help the industry. It confuses buyers. It creates so much cloudiness around things. It creates mistrust as well between brokers. And then you do get the ones that sneakily try and put it at the lowest price below what the seller wants and
This is the issue,
and one of the biggest reasons I hear sellers say, no, put it at this price, is because I'm going to get really low offers, and I want it to be as high as possible so that I can negotiate, and it's crazy.
It's a mindset thing. Think about it this way instead. If I put it at a realistic price, a price that if I got and didn't get any other offers, I would accept and I'm happy with. They should be listing around that price. What's probably going to happen, it's going to attract the most interest.
Exactly.
It's going to be differentiated from the other similar properties in the market. You're going to have multiple bids on it.
Right?
You're not going to accept the first offer. And you're probably going to get more than what your asking price is. Right? If it's priced right. If you're pricing at that high end, there's some people that will just cap their search. Right?
Yep.
Especially if you're at one of the let's say it's a, you think it's worth 3.8, he wants to be at 4 million. Some of the searches just cap at 4 million. If it was at 39999, it might fall in that. But once you go over those thresholds, it can even be omitted from someone's search. And then you also get people like, you know, I don't want to be insulting by going and offer a lower price. This seller obviously thinks it's worth this, and they don't bother.
Buyer market, basically. You lose who you're trying to attract by putting them out of the market. Yeah.
Now, we've had that recently. A couple of buyers have said, look, I'm not making an offer. The gap is too big. It's too big. Just leave it.
Yeah. I mean, negotiations go two ways, right? Under and over, right? When it's priced right and you attract interest to it, the price will decide itself. You will have bids. There'll be multiple bids on it.
Yeah.
We were speaking before. I mean, if you've got a listing on the portals and it's sitting there for more than 2 to 4 weeks and you're not getting offers, it's overpriced.
It's overpriced.
Yeah. That simple. Mm. You guys have a line of buyers right now where if something comes on in certain communities, you're picking up the phone, you're calling them, not even hitting the market.
Yeah.
And this is being reported by brokerages across the market. Yeah. they're the ones that are priced right. It's the ones that are going out, being advertised. There's something to be said about those. And what the problem is, you want to sell. Most sellers are going, all right, where am I going to go look for my price? What are other villas on the market for right now? And they see those overpriced listings, and then they start from their initial thought process. It's going, well, that's what I'm competing with. If they think they can get it, well, I can get it too. You're using a CMA where you're actually taking real data, closed transactions, and made a present that going, well, so that might be what they're asking. Here's what they're actually selling for.
Yeah, not just something they say, not something an agent's telling them. It's truth, you know, it's factual.
And it's not just transactions, it's ROI. You know, especially in Dubai Marina, the ROI is almost like on the money for a lot of buildings. Availability is another indicator that we use. I mean, I do use listings on Property Finder, what is available on there. And also the condition of the property in terms of, is it rented or is it vacant? If it's rented, then the owner-occupier market isn't there. And an owner-occupier will always pay a little bit more for a unit that they love.
There's an emotional connection, right?
There's an emotional connection, So it's not just transactions, and that's what, you know, the reports that you guys send out, we just pluck lots of information from that to try and educate the seller.
So last question, Zan. You from an established US market, what do you say the main difference is?
Oh, there's none. Everything's the same. There are a lot of differences. I mean, I was a broker in Manhattan, one of the most competitive markets in the world. This place is much more competitive.
So you thought.
Because the nature of the business here is different. I don't want it to come as a knock. It's probably a little more professional the way it is competitive in New York. You've got a lot
regulated.
And you've got a lot of top tier brokers, a lot of brokers that are in the business for a long time. They get into the business going, this is my career for the next 10, 15, 20 years. And they treat it like a broker should. It's a people business.
But the barrier to entry to be a broker over there is completely different.
Oh, it's not that much. It's a little bit longer course and other things. Every state's different, but there are more regulations and things in there. Takes a little longer. There's more continuing education, but still it's just people get in to build a business. And you get good brokers here that do the same. They're building a business. Then you get other ones that come out for the quick buck. All right, so you've got a large pool of them which don't really help the market a lot of the time. One of the other big differences is exclusivity. Exclusivity is in the best interest of the seller. It's in the best interest of the seller if it's done with the right broker. If a broker prices the property correctly, they market and advertise that property and attract people, and they cooperate with other brokers. If you take exclusivity, you have a fiduciary obligation to get the best price from the best buyer, whether it's your own or from another broker.
I've said that to the guys and the team, that winning a listing exclusively is not an opportunity to get all the commission. It's got to, you've got to collaborate, and that's got to be one of the big selling points of you as a broker to a seller, is that I will work with other companies and other brokers to get the best client
best
for
buyer,
you.
Best buyer, best price, no matter where that comes
and
from.
Exactly.
And you phone up, if you phone up some agents who do have an exclusive property, one of the first things they'll tell you is, sorry, it's exclusive, I'm not working with you.
And that's against the client.
And that's against the client.
Exactly. What comes first is not your pocket. You work for that seller. Right? And then if you're representing the buyer directly, now technically you're working for two people's best interests. So sometimes in New York, a lot of time, we don't want that conflict. We budget and build our business plans around, you know what, I'm probably going to do 90% co-broke deals where there's another broker involved and 10% here.
You can as well. You can go out there and network and put the effort in.
The relationship a broker has, if you've got a good relationship with other brokers, you just need to pick up the phone. I've got a new listing. Who do you have for it? And vice versa. I've got a buyer and we're looking for this. What do you guys have that maybe hasn't hit the market yet or other things?
Is that because you don't want that conflict of interest of negotiating for two parties?
I mean, it's really tough to do. So there's laws around it in New York about proper disclosure to everyone. There's documents that have to be signed. Some companies go a step further and go, look, we might do the deal directly, but even though you've got the buy, your colleague's got to handle it, and you guys can't talk to each other.
Yeah.
Which sometimes the right way, it can be a tough line. They're really strict in New York about it because of the way you find out a piece of information again from the seller during the selling process, and now you representing the buyer. Correct. And it's just really tough to draw that line. It's better just to step aside. Look, the quicker you can sell something for the more money, the more you can go to the next deal. Yeah, right? You've got a very happy seller and a very happy buyer. I wish more people would think that way here. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people that don't.
Do you have more agents in Manhattan, for example, who say, I am a buyer's agent only, I am a seller's agent only?
So when I was a broker, I was listing focused.
Yeah. Right?
That's where my skill set was. It was going out, I'm a data guy. Right? So pricing property has always been a thing.
We know. Right?
So that's where I excelled. Right? And then marketing and showcasing those, and then networking with those people in the industry. Yeah. I wasn't someone that loved to run in with a buyer and see 20 different properties.
Yeah.
It would frustrate me. It wasn't, I'm somewhat of a people person, but it comes to an extent, and I didn't work as well with buyers. I did handle some buyers, but I was primarily focused around the seller. And you'll get a lot of brokers that differentiate themselves that way, and they use it as a marketing tool.
Yeah.
I only work with sellers.
Yeah.
I represent your best interests.
Exactly.
Here, a lot of the time, a buyer assumes that the broker is working for them.
Yeah.
And a lot of times they're not. And it doesn't come down to compensation. Right?
Mm.
Who pays you doesn't necessarily dictate who you've got loyalty to. Mm. That can be
relationship.
Can be completely different. It's how you act and the actions that you take. Other differences to New York? Well, there's more cooperation. There's probably a little bit more legislation. The markets are very similar in the property types, right? Heavily apartment driven. A lot of townhouses in Manhattan, you don't really have villas, but you've got adjoining buildings. A lot of townhouses, same here, you've got that same split. You've got a very similar split to how people rent versus own. Right? Dubai market, it's primarily the renter's market. Same with Manhattan, primary renter's market. Other than those, I can't, not too many come to head.
Can I ask you then, if you could bring one, two, or three aspects of that market to this Dubai market, what would they be?
First one would be cooperation between brokers.
Cooperation.
Hands down, unilateral cooperation between brokers that is regulated.
Yeah.
Now, in the US, it's regulated by a trade association that is run by the brokers. So there's heads of the brokerage firms that are on there. It's under, so the National Association of Realtors would be the governing body for the country, and they have state associations and they have local associations. In New York, they have a different association, but same premise. It's a trade organization that looks out for the best interest of the brokers.
That'd be great here.
And they have a set of rules that they agree to do business by.
Yeah.
Like not going and contacting someone else's client.
Yeah.
And they all make complete sense. And having that, and almost every market has it, in the US and in Canada and some of the other markets, and they have this unilateral agreement to cooperate. And if you're a member of that trade association, you agree by these rules. If you're not a member or you get kicked out because you do the wrong thing, brokers might say, you know what, I'm not going to cooperate with you for AM, but we're not going to share the commission. You're going to have to get your commission solely from this source. There were different things that are in there. A little bit different here is we don't really have trade associations. We've got RERA and the DOD. They've taken some of those really good things. They put in a licensing course, code of ethics, and other things in there. But it's not their job to regulate the day-to-day interaction between brokers. What it would take, it's one of the things I talked about with Zara years ago, is getting the big companies together to have this agreement, to form, we'll call it a trade association, something where it's
other,
it's that is going to would be a big step forward. But it relies on everyone going, you know what, these double-ended deals where I'm doing direct deals, I've got to just let go of that, right? And understand that it's going to change anyway. It's going to happen.
At some point.
If they can let go of that, I think that starts to open the way of, we want to do business together. You take a buyer to go see another broker's listing, you're telling them the name. You're not hiding it. And the broker's telling you the address. Because they've got agreements in place.
Exactly.
Right? And they've agreed to do business. They've got their buyer agreement, they've got the seller agreement, and then they've got their own agreement between the brokers that we're not going to mess around with each other.
Just do it more official on a bigger platform across the board.
Yeah, I think that would fundamentally change things here for the better.
And that's linked to owners and brokers agreeing exclusivity.
A big part of it is, right? Yeah. And then there's instance of co-exclusivity, where you might have a couple of firms that both take on the listing, and they might have a compensation agreement where, regardless of who sells it, we're splitting the commission. An example might be the seller's going to pay 3%. Right? If I've got it and I'm a broker and I'm the one responsible for selling it, whether it's another broker or not, of that 3% the seller's paying, I'm keeping 3, you're getting 1.
Yeah.
So you still get compensated for your time.
Yeah.
And it could flip around the other way.
Right? Yeah.
Or it could be equal split, tons of different ways to do it. Yeah. So there's co-exclusivity, there's not a lot of this open listings where everyone can go out and list it, because it just doesn't do anyone good. No. 10 listings on the portal for the same property?
Yeah. No, and this is one aspect that I try to speak to sellers about, is if you are going to engage with other agents and potentially do deals directly with other agents, just have one on Property Finder, for example, in terms of online. Just have one good listing on the portal.
Yeah.
Of course, agents will advertise on their websites, but in terms of the main portal, one listing.
Yeah. So it doesn't look like there's an oversupply of those properties. I've worked with a lot of developers in the past that have said, I know there's only 2 of these for sale, but there is 200 in the portals of the same property. And it just, you know, changed the stats a bit.
The other side is that you could, ideally, if only have one on the portal, but the portals could also do something where they only have one listing, but they list multiple brokers on that listing page. Right. So instead of having it in search results, it come up 5 times. You've got all 5 on there.
Does Zillow do that?
Their model's a little different. It's still, there's an exclusive agent. They've got a paid placement. I'm not advocating for that here.
Yeah.
It's a great model.
Please don't.
It's a great model. I used to actually pay for those spots. You do it by zip code and you generate leads, but but again, because we're banking on it being probably a co-broke deal anyway, most listing agents are like, just fine. I don't mind that you're there if you're paying Zillow to be there. That's not what I'm advocating here. I'm going, right, if 5 people have the same listing, permission to advertise it, should be at the same price on the portal, just one listing. Yeah. But list all 5 brokers. I don't know, rotate them randomly or something. Mm. Whatever it is.
Better for the consumer as well. The visitor's going to the site and seeing everything together on the one listing.
Exactly.
Interesting.
Yeah, because sometimes buyers will see an agent who's very prominent in one community and say, do you know what, he's the expert in there, I'm going to phone him, as opposed to someone or a company that they don't really know. So that's a good idea.
Well, thank you very much. Interesting and exciting information and stats there. So looking forward to H2.
Yeah.
Will you come back and tell us how we're doing?
Anytime.
Thank you, Zan. Thank you. Thank you, Michael, as well.
Thanks for having me.
Cheers.
Thank you for tuning in to Property Talk from Louise's Lounge, and I hope you've enjoyed today's chat. If you do have any feedback or any suggestions or comments that you'd like to make, please let us know, and I'll hope you tune in next time. Thank you.